Welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit, the podcast that brings you the change makers in education. Tune in to hear from educational leaders who aren't content with the status quo educational model and are blazing their own path. Well, welcome to the program. Today we have Martin Dugiamas from Moodle, and you've probably all heard about that, and then Open EdTech, which is a fairly new venture. And I'm just going to jump right in and let Martin give us a little bit of background about himself. I think I heard maybe you have some, outback beginnings, origins. So tell us about how did you get to where you are today?
So just hi, Ryan. I'll summarize my whole life. Sure.
Sure.
It's something
to see forward.
I do frequently. So I grew up in the center of Australia, which is largely desert, in Aboriginal communities. And I was often the only non-Aboriginal child, like in town. And a lot of my early learning, where if it wasn't just, hands-on in the bush and getting that appreciation for nature from the Aboriginal communities, was online learning. Now I'm 53 now, so this was back in the 70s, and online learning then was shortwave radio. And my school was off the atmosphere for shortwave radio to get there, and there was a lot of over, sort of CB radio style. So until I was 12, that's how I learned most things. And when I got to a school in the city of Perth, which is where I live now in Western Australia, I was a year ahead. So I was a year younger than everyone else through high school. And throughout my life, I've been really into science fiction. Somebody brought me a science fiction book when I was a kid in the desert, and I felt like I was on Mars already. So I really got into a lot of the, science fiction from the 40s, 50s, 60s, Heinlein and all the classics. And what I liked in those was that in a lot of them, Earth had sorted out most of its issues. Mm-hmm. And now the issues were on an interplanetary scale or intergalactic scale. And I always appreciated technology's role in bringing people together. And I always sort of liked that. So I was very interested in technology. I got into computer science and worked at a university. I did a lot of other things, but I ended up at a university. And helping academics get there to use the technology that was around. And so as that sort of consulting role, I started to see, well, I can make better things than what's around. And so I started developing Moodle at the university, testing it on students and working with open source. And, once that started to take off, I left my job, left everything, and just got full time into Moodle. So that's been a good 20 plus years now on that journey, and continues to grow.
Excellent. And then I'll get to the Open EdTech question in a little bit. So I'll use my wife as an example of somebody that I think has used Moodle many times, but doesn't know they're using Moodle.
Very common.
And so I guess for our listeners, could you briefly describe both what is an LMS and then what is Moodle's take on that?
So the way I look at a learning management system, and that's a US term, actually. Back when I started, there was also the idea of a course management system. And in the UK, they called them virtual learning environments. And of course, in non-English countries, they called them all sorts of other things. Yeah. But LMS has sort of surfaced as the word most people understand now. And it's about managing the learning, of course. And the way I would like to describe it is that if you had a brick and mortar school or a university, some institution, and you wanted to bring it online, that the LMS is the shortest way of doing that. So it's almost transferring a lot of the concepts from, having enrollment, having departments with courses in them, and the courses have teachers and students. And then within a course, you have resources and activities. And then there's a bunch of admin to ship data between them. And you know, when there's grading, what happens at the end of the course, how the assessment adds up and sort of admin stuff. And that's basically what an LMS is. And Moodle is was always an open source LMS. And there's been a few over the years, quite a few, a lot of them left in the wayside because it's very important for open source to be sustainable. And I'll be happy to talk about the way, a good way to build open source. But most of the competitors are big commercial software like Blackboard or you know, Canvas, proprietary software. And the fact that Moodle was open led to it becoming the most used LMS in the world. So we're like the Linux of operating systems, if you like. A lot of people don't know they use Linux either, but every time you use an app or you use a, use Twitter or you use Google or Facebook or Apple, you're using Linux because they're all just driving all of that. Moodle usually gets taken by some tech person. They rebrand it, retheme it, make it look different, change the name, and they'll make a learning platform. And when you enroll somewhere, that's what you're using usually. So, 2/3 of the world's universities use Moodle.
So I was fascinated by that total. Because I know that in a lot of the coursework I've done at universities, that's been what we used. And it seems pretty, you know, omnipresent almost. Would, for the, let's say, K-12 educators, would something like Google Classroom or what Microsoft is attempting to do with Teams and having classroom-based things, is that their version of an LMS? Is that kind of an equivalent?
It's certainly coming into the same space. Okay. It's shaped by the background of Google and Microsoft with these Office products they have, and of course devices that they have, but it's for some people that may be enough, but with the learning management systems are still in very wide use because they have depth. Some of the complex activities that teachers and academics and trainers want to do are just not possible with that kind of off-the-shelf, you know, office-based software.
And within the beauty of open source too, I would assume that, you know, if you either have a right sysadmin or your own tech geekitude that you can do this and really dig in, you can customize the whole thing. Whereas, you know, Google Classroom, you're locked out. It's proprietary.
Well, that's the beauty, The institution or company, a lot of companies use Moodle. The U.S. The U.S. Air Force uses Moodle for its training. The U.S. Army. So they have very specific needs, and they really want it to happen this way. And so they're able to achieve that by making modifications or adding community plugins or writing their own plugins. And I get a lot of goodwill from people out there who say, you know, thanks for my job. I am a computer science. I've got a computer science degree, and I'm working as the IT guy IT person at the institution. And I'm the local hero because they want this, and I can give it to them. You know, I'm using my skills. Which is a lot better than just, you know, having to call up the SaaS provider and trying to get something to happen through the help desk.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a huge open source fan. For the last decade or so, once I discovered Linux, I've been trying to dig into that. And just, I think philosophically, just open source in general is so powerful. So in that way, I'll use that as my own segue to talk about open ed tech. What is that? In a nutshell, and what has inspired you to get going with that?
So we're looking to the future of what we should do at Moodle. I'm leading 250 people on our main team at Moodle, and we have 100 partners, and we have a huge number of organizations involved, and so on. And it's my role to look ahead, right? Where do we want to be in 10 years? Moodle is a PHP application. It's done well for last 20 years. It's going to be doing well for the next 10 years, but if you said to anybody, you know, where do you think our technology is all going to be in 2050 or in 50 years from now, it's probably not going to be a PHP applications. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of progression in all areas of computer science in the last 20 years. So it's quite tempting that to look afresh with a fresh eye at everything, the whole environment, and go, well, if we had no baggage or history or backward compatibility to worry about, what's the most ideal framework we can imagine for learning on a global scale? And open ed tech is about defining that vision. Okay. And getting as much consensus from as many people as possible. And there are three parts to it: the open, of course, the mm-hmm. education, and the technology. Mm-hmm. And those three are all necessary to be in there. Once we have that vision, then everybody can start building into it. And it's going to take a lot of people. It's a very, very ambitious idea.
Mm-hmm. What... I read, for anybody that wants to do this, go to openedtech.org, I believe it is, right?
Global.
And check out the launch paper if you haven't. It's a very short read and very well organized. I love bullet points, and it's kind of brief to the point, and I love that. And it's only 15 pages for those that want to dig in.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
Sign up onto the newsletter there as well.
Oh, yes. While you're there. Sign up for the newsletter. I need to do that myself.
Yeah, please do.
What does come through the newsletter? What are you envisioning?
Look, it's still at early stages. We actually started back in 2019, and it all got put back on. We started with a conference. We had 100 plus people in Barcelona physically working out the principles of what we needed. And it got put on hold because of the pandemic, like so many things, and we're just getting back into it. The association is just about to be signed. There will be an actual non-profit association, which is based in Brussels. What you'll see on the newsletter is news about our various activities. So we have a meeting every 2 months to get interested people together to talk about what's new. We have five or six working groups around the different parts where we're discussing things. There are events happening, you know, there will be. So if it's not going to be very high bandwidth on the newsletter, it's just, I know how it is. You know, there's a lot of projects I want to keep tabs on the internet, and signing up for email is a pretty convenient way to get occasional news and just stay in touch and see if you want to go any further. Mm-hmm. But most of the discussions happening on our chat rooms, which are in Matrix, and they're Matrix-based chat rooms.
There's so many directions I want to go. Let's see. I'll start with this. So you said five to six working groups. What do those look like? Is open ed tech, open source in the same way, like GitHub or whatever, that I could become I'm a teacher in the middle of Nebraska. Can I jump in and contribute, or what does this look like?
All right. Now, I'll break it down a bit. So look, the end product is what I think we would like to all have is an infrastructure that's global, that's standard, you know, standard like email. So I can send you an email, Ryan, and you can send me an email, and we don't ever worry about email formats anymore or standards. It's just email, right? It's sort of done. We don't worry about HTTP. We don't worry about so many parts of the internet that are just standardized. But in education, we still have tons of competition and flip-flopping and companies coming and going and standards starting and stopping, and it's very disruptive. And I feel that for education in particular, that's a place we don't want that kind of disruption, you know, on the level of formats and affordances. So if it's about bringing the standardization up to those very high levels, and it's not even about defining all the standards, it's about choosing the standards that we're all going to support. W3C make great standards. One EdTech makes standards. There are standards bodies around, but they all have broader agendas than a standard open education technology. Mm-hmm. So they end up getting distracted. And I feel like what we can bring to this is selecting and curating these standards. Now,
okay.
I'm still talking abstractly. So what does it mean in a solid form? In a solid form, what it means is that as a learner, I have a place to get a space that is my learning space mm-hmm. online. And I never need to worry about it going away. It's for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And I never need to worry about who owns it and who controls my data, because it's completely secure and I own it. I never need to worry about any of that stuff. So it's got to be, you have to be able to trust it. It needs to be something you can trust. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there's no .com or .gov or .anything that you can really trust. So we need to build this thing in a distributed way. So imagine that all the education system was supporting the running of the cloud that runs this, where your stuff is stored. And that's for the learner. In that space, there's a lot of innovation possible. We have the ability to store your credentials in a way that you can share them and prove them and prove them to other people. Mm-hmm. We have the ability for AI to be personalized and operating on your data and acting as an advisor. So you have an AI assistant that's with you lifelong, mm-hmm. Helping to guide your learning and on a macro level. So helping you to choose, you know, your career, and on a micro level, like what are you going to learn this afternoon? And I see that the need for that is going to be very important, because learning becomes more of a feed and your direction change. So if you look at YouTube or the success of these or social media, how the algorithms start, you know, giving you a feed and you can curate your own feed. And it's you're working with an AI essentially to determine what the next thing you look at is. Mm-hmm. So it's that, but it's in your control. And when you're wearing AR glasses in a few years, you know, big companies like Apple have said iPhone will be redundant in 10 years. They'll be replaced with AR glasses. And there's plenty of evidence. And I've been playing with VR since 1996. I had my first VR. It's actually getting to a point where you can see it will sneak onto our faces and be sitting there. Mm-hmm. So your learning will be something that affects your day-to-day experience all day. And if that's the case, you do not want Facebook putting ads in it or Google taking stuff away from you. And it's not because I'm saying those companies are evil or anything, but it's just the nature of companies and products is that they come and go. And it's disruptive to education. So it is possible with distributed federated technologies to build this kind of thing. And I'll give you one example that everyone would know, which is BitTorrent. BitTorrent, you know, those files sit out there. We don't know what servers they're on. We don't care what servers they're on. Little bits are on different people's servers. Mm-hmm. It all works because it's technology designed to be distributed. And that's there's plenty of those sorts of examples. Blockchain is another one, of course. Mm-hmm. Right, so that's the learner. And from the teaching point of view, you need access to really high quality content. So open education resources that are free, that are very high quality, that are validated. And that means a lot of people have looked at it and said, yeah, this is quality. That is going to become more and more important as the amount of content that we have access to continues to exponentially skyrocket, because most of it's going to be generated by AI. We're already seeing, if you haven't seen it already, look into it. But I don't know about you, Ryan. I'm talking to anyone's listening. The ability to generate amazing images, amazing videos. Yes.
I watched I think it was a UNESCO talk for Open EdTech, and you had some pictures of just what you could generate. And oh my gosh,
That's already highly out of date. That was a few months ago.
Wow.
you can now generate movies and direct them like a director and say, I want to see a blue balloon bobbing on a tree and it floats away across the zoo, and then the camera pans down into the zoo and you see a giraffe, and the giraffe zoom in on the mouth, and you can direct a movie, and it's completely generated from the computer. Mm-hmm. Conceptually, by not cutting and pasting things, mm-hmm. it's actually conceiving of them the same way an artist would. So that I mean, if we can all generate 18 part series of the best TV we can ever imagine, I mean, we're going to be doing it, right? So there's going to be a lot of fake news around, and it's really important that educators have access to very high quality content that we can trust, mm-hmm. because our role in education is super important in helping us navigate this next phase of
teaching critical thinking skills. How do you discern what is real and not?
Well, yeah, I mean, just going on a search engine and searching is going to turn up all kinds of weirdness.
Oh, I believe it.
As it does. So there's the content, and then if you're ever going to get learners together to learn something, you know, in a classroom, I think that concept is still valid. I think it's still a good idea to get people together to collaborate around learning something. Then that should be totally best practice. It should be really fun. It should be a club that you want to be in, and you want to be in this class learning this stuff with other people, and it should be very interactive. So that's the kind of space Moodle has traditionally been in the classroom experience. But there's a lot of parts to that, right? You need a lot of people who make video conferencing, and people who make who are interested in assessing, and people are interested in also them, all these little tools that are around. As a teacher, you want to use all these little tools and be able to wield them effectively to create a wonderful experience for your students. Yeah. And I believe to do that effectively, you can't be just employed at an institution and the institution owns that course and you might leave next year and it all goes, right? I think the teacher should own it. And mm-hmm. so in the Open EdTech vision, it's anyone who's interested in teaching would create their space for life, for free. Uh-huh. And that would sit out there as well. And, you know, the future for us at Moodle the challenge would be, okay, well, how do we create Moodle Next Generation to sit in that space? And also other people can create solutions in there as well. So that's kind of the gist of it, the thing, and there's lots of other parts, but mm-hmm. the ultimate aim, I think, is about solving all the infighting that's going on. You know, I don't think capitalism is a great model in education. I think what we should be doing is finding ways for the educators to work together on something more common. And that's what Moodle is. We've got tens of thousands of educators have contributed to it so far through open source, and we know it works. But we just, I really want to see that happening more, you know, mm-hmm. wider.
Yeah. So is the main mechanism right now kind of with Open EdTech, is it to spread the word, you know, be missionaries of sorts, or are there like next actionable steps? Like you're going to find somebody to create the learner dashboard and go.
So there's a couple of levels. The first level is, you know, designing the vision, mm-hmm. and fleshing out more of those things I was just talking about. And at this point, we're in a research phase. So anybody, mm-hmm. everyone's following subjects related to that, posting links. Here's an interesting project out here that's doing some of this already. Here's especially in AI, there's news every day. I mean, there's always something new every day. We're seeing who is it should be part of this. Who should we talk to? Who should we bring in? And that part. The second part, when we start building, is that we need people who can put their money where their mouth is. So this is generally companies who are already making open source education technology. So Moodle, obviously, but like edX or Big Blue Button or Mahara or even Library Space, you know, like Koha or there's many of these projects, and the association will be a place we all join together as members and help fund and help generate funding for this development, so that we all, in all of our roadmaps, we're all we're heading towards the same overall. Yes, exactly. So it's about that synchronization of existing groups, and then later on creating new groups where necessary to work on specific things, or just pulling people in who might be two people in GitHub somewhere working on something that's just amazing, you know, and we can give them a platform to say, well, look, here's that, your puzzle piece fits in here, and let's open it up to the world and connect us up. So, yes.
So let's see what I want to ask you next. I'm so, man, this needs like 15 hours worth of my questions because I have so many, but I actually want to wrap it up just for the sake of time. So let's say I'm a teacher and I want to get involved in kind of what the next steps are. Would that be, what would you recommend they do? If I'm just curious, how do we help teachers fall down the rabbit hole, I guess is what most exciting question is in my head all the time.
Well, look, I'm a very big believer in teachers as action researchers. I think if you're serious about teaching online as an educator, then you will be involved in ongoing action research. You're looking at your own practice. You're improving it next time. You're fixing this. You're tweaking that. You're doing this. Mm-hmm. So everyone's learning and researching. If you have insights that you're developing, we really want you around. We really want to know what's working, what isn't working. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean, it's not about the specifics of this tool or that tool. It's like, what dynamic is really working? How are you navigating the inherent difficulty of current interfaces, you know, pieces of glass that we're using here to and sending electricity to each other to communicate with? Mm-hmm. How are we, you know, what's really working? And that's where it really gets the practitioner and the theory hit the road, and your contribution's welcome. So, like, just hang out. And as we get a little bit further down the road, we're going to be sending out prototype, like, demos, mock-ups, sketches, you know, and we're really staying at that interface level. We're not getting too deep on the stack of technology yet because, I mean, some of us are, and I certainly am getting into that, but we're not, in the open ed tech thing, we're not focusing on that right now. We don't want to be technology led. We want to be educator led. Okay. So if we can agree that, wow, this would be a great system if it existed, then we can start building it. So yeah, it's very accessible. I think anyone who wants to come in is very welcome. We're open to all. Mm-hmm. Now we use Matrix for our chat platform, okay, and I'll explain why. As you know, there's many messaging platforms around. You know, we could be using Facebook Messenger or Facebook. We could be using Telegram or Twitter or Slack or Teams or any of those. But they're just by their nature not open. They're not open source. I feel that messaging is a bigger and bigger part of all of our use of the internet, right? I will assume you know from your own experience that probably 50% of your time on your phone is actually messaging of some sort. You're sending messages or reading messages. And that's becoming the core of our experience using the internet.
Yeah.
And at Moodle, we're actually integrating messaging into the heart of Moodle. Okay. And to do that, I can't say, oh, hey, everybody, if you're using Moodle, you know, get onto Telegram or, you know, get onto Teams because it doesn't jibe well. It's not open. And it's hard to force anybody. So Matrix is a really nice open messaging framework that is very easy to get into. It's very distributed and federated and works really well. And quite easy to integrate into things. So it's possible to make bridges from Matrix to, you know, WhatsApp or something if you're using that. And you can talk to your WhatsApp friends from Matrix.
Okay.
So it becomes a kind of an open source glue. And the standards that they use to build it are themselves an open standards framework. So there's a whole lot of people are suggesting additions to the standard and modifications to the standards. And it's very, very open. It's a perfect system. So we are all in on that. And so we're using it for open edtech discussions as well. So, you know, like any new tool, it takes a little learning curve to first get in. But once you're in, you'll find it's just like any other messaging platform.
Okay. So jump in on Matrix.
Yeah, see you in the Matrix. It's so fun, actually. I'm really enjoying how hackable it is again, you know. So I've got a fun bot that uses a GPT-3 AI, and it thinks it's one of the staff, and it's hanging around in the chats, just jumping in on conversations, and it's very human. Like it's passing the Turing test daily. So it's quite fun. And that hackability of Matrix is fun again. That's something you really can't do on WhatsApp or whatever.
Yeah, that's neat. Well, if someone wants to follow your work, what should they do? What are the best ways to keep track besides obviously the newsletter? But if they want to follow you as an influencer, so to speak, in this edtech world, how can they do that?
Look, I appreciate that. I need to get better at my feed. I would say at this point, Open EdTech is where most of the action is. So follow the Open EdTech Twitter. It'll be on Mastodon as well soon. The newsletter. You can find me on Twitter as well currently, Moodler with an R at the end. And as I move around, I'll post it there. Probably you'll see it there.
Excellent.
It's quite difficult to be doing a lot of new stuff while running a company with 250 people. And we had a Moodle conference in Barcelona last month, 840 people from 60 countries, very huge, just a banging conference. Absolutely amazing. So much enthusiasm from people around the world. Mm-hmm. Our community is very, very exciting. So that does keep me busy. But I am shifting more and more of my time towards open ed tech. Okay. So you'll see that.
That's the new place to follow you. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, Martin, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show today.
No, my pleasure, Ryan. Thank you.
Best of luck as you move forward on this. I'm looking forward to following it and being a part of it in whatever way I can.
Well, see you there, I hope, and anyone else too. You're all very welcome. I think it's the last thing I just want to say is to remember the importance of education to us as a species, that we're at this point of the Earth's development where we're all globalizing and running into each other now and figuring out how to work together on a global basis. And we have a roadmap of really important problems to solve. The UN Sustainable Development Goals, that's the only agenda that the world has agreed to, you know, solving inequality, climate change, and 15 other things. And you can't solve any of them without good education. And if people can't get an education because they can't afford it, or it's not local, or it's, if there's blockages to that, then I feel like that's going to hurt us all. So it's in all of our interests to have high quality education for free everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's where I end it too. And I hope everyone's having a go at that big nut in their own way, wherever they can.
Those are inspiring words. Thank you.
No, thanks, Ryan. Appreciate the time.